It's very short, and one that I haven't heard a ton of messages from, but one that God has used in my life in a great way, and it's a subject that he's worn me out with a couple times, and I hope it can be a blessing to you guys tonight. The book of Philemon, it's only one chapter, so we're gonna start in verse 8 in just a minute, but if there was any subject that Paul could deal with that's hard for us to, as Christians to deal with, it would be this matter of reconciliation. If there's anything that's hard for us to handle, it's the matter of forgiveness in our Christian lives. And it's something that we all need because we all mess up and we all mess up relationships with people around us. And yet Paul here writes on behalf of a man who has literally run away from his problems. Don't you wish that sometimes you could just run away from all your problems to make everything just go away and say, I just need to take a vacation from all of my problems and then life would be good, right? We just want to run away. But this is literally what this guy by the name of Onesimus has done. He's literally run away from the hardship in his life. He's run away from the problems that he's caused. He's run away in fear. And this is a guy who now, having run away from his problems, has found himself smack dab in the middle of God's omniscient perfect plan for his life, and he's wound up having run into the Apostle Paul, who's in prison on house arrest, and he's run into Paul, and Paul has literally had a hand in leading this guy Onesimus to Christ. And Paul's goal here is to write to Philemon, the guy who Onesimus caused a lot of pain in his life. He caused a lot of hurt and a lot of hardship in his life, and Paul's writing to Philemon and sending a letter with Onesimus and saying, hey, you're going to go back and you're going to give this to Philemon. And Paul is writing with one goal in mind, that of reconciliation. And he's writing so that Philemon and Onesimus would be reconciled, or there would be forgiveness. And if there was any one book that you and I could read in the New Testament that would completely go against everything in our flesh, it would be this book of Philemon. If there's anything that goes completely opposes what our flesh, our carnal nature wants to do, it would be this book. See, before salvation, Ephesians 2 talks about time and time again how we desire to go after the lust of our flesh. We desire to walk in our flesh, to live and do the things that are natural to us. And see, in my lost position, in my state before I knew Christ, in my state before I was saved, that's exactly what I wanted to do. When it came to relationships, I didn't want to reconcile things. I wanted to get revenge at people. When it came to problems and when it came to things that had been messed up, to relationships that I'd had taken issue with, my desire wasn't to settle the conflict. My desire was to stoke up the fire a little bit more. My desire was to pour a little more gas on it, right? My desire was to keep track of all the offenses, of all the wrongs that people had done toward me. That was my desire in my unsaved, my sinful, my fleshly nature. But now that we've been saved, now that we've been reconciled back to God, now that he's changed our life, if there's anything that God has designed for me to do, if there's anything that God designs for you and I to live out, it is that he designed us to live out a life of forgiveness, a life of reconciliation. And tonight, if we're honest, though, sometimes we view our forgiveness in light and magnitude of the situations that are around us. And sometimes we view forgiveness as an impossibility. Oh, that situation, that's just too far gone. That problem, that's too hard. I could never forgive them for that. Don't you know what they did to me? Don't you know all the wrongs and the things that they did against me? Don't you know? Don't you know the pain that they caused? I could never get to the place where I could forgive that. But the fact of the matter is that while I had no choice when I was lost but to act and react according to my fleshly nature, my worldly desires, now that I've been saved, now that I have the Holy Spirit in my life, now that he's come in, he's completely rewired me, he's changed me, he's transformed my life, now that I'm a partaker of the divine nature and not the fleshly nature, I have been designed, I have been programmed by the Spirit of God to walk in forgiveness. And the world would look at that type of forgiveness as an impossibility, but for the believer, it ought to be our way of life. And in this passage, Paul is about to literally lay out the blueprint for biblical forgiveness. And sometimes we like to think that any level of our forgiveness is biblical forgiveness, don't we? We like to think, well, if I've just forgiven just a little bit, that's good enough. That's what the Bible tells me to do. I've forgiven them. But sometimes our type of forgiveness really isn't God's type of forgiveness. And sometimes what I call forgiveness doesn't reflect what God has in his word. And we say, yeah, I forgave them, but I don't have to be their best friend or anything, right? I forgave them of that, but but we don't really have to get along. I don't have to go to their house. I don't really have to spend that much time with them. We made up. We got things right, but you just can't expect things to be the same way that they were, can you really? I mean, we've got it all good. It's okay, but we just decided we're not going to talk about it anymore. Sometimes that's our level of forgiveness. But we're going to begin reading here in verse number 8, and this is really picks up right where Paul has left off. He's finished his greeting, and now in verse number 8, Paul says this to Philemon. He says, "Wherefore, though I might be much bold in Christ to enjoin thee that which is convenient, yet for love's sake I rather beseech thee, being such an one as Paul the aged, and now also a prisoner of Jesus Christ, I beseech thee for my son Onesimus, whom I have begotten in my bonds, which in time past was to thee unprofitable, but now profitable to thee and to me, whom I have sent again. Thou therefore receive him, that is, mine own bowels, whom I would have retained with me unto me in the bonds, and I said he might have ministered unto me in the bonds of the gospel, but without thy mind would I do nothing, that thy benefit should not be, as it were, of necessity, but willingly. For perhaps, therefore, he departed for a season, that thou shouldest receive him forever. Not now as a servant, but above a servant, a brother beloved, specially to me, but how much more unto thee, both in the flesh and in the Lord, if thou count me therefore a partner, receive him as myself. And if he hath wronged me, or oweth thee aught, put that on mine account." Did you notice how Paul began this letter in verse number 8? He starts literally by saying, "Hey Philemon, this isn't the convenient thing for me to do. This isn't the easy thing for me to do, Philemon. Hey, I'm writing you to try to get you guys to reconcile, but this is not the easy thing to do. And by the way, doing God's will in our life often is never the easy thing for us to do." And he's saying, "Hey, it's going to require a little bit of work. It's not convenient for you." But when God had in mind biblical forgiveness, he wanted Paul to write to Philemon and say, "Hey, there's got to be some reconciliation. It's not going to be the easy thing for you to do, but we're going to have to work at this a little bit. We're going to have to work through a few things, Philemon, if indeed you're going to find a blueprint for your biblical forgiveness. If you're going to ever see this relationship be completely reconciled, you're going to have to work through a few things here." Notice with me, first of all, tonight, he gives them the persuasion of forgiveness. Number one, the persuasion of forgiveness. Verse number 9, the Bible says, "Yet for love's sake, I rather beseech thee, being such an one as Paul the aged, and now also a prisoner of Jesus Christ." Now, if you know much about Paul, this is a guy with quite the extensive resume. This is a guy who, all throughout the New Testament, he's written over half of it, and all throughout the New Testament, you find title after title after title of Paul. This is a guy who's got an extensive list on his resume. He's got an extensive list of titles, and we know through many of his own greetings, he's often referred to as Paul the Apostle, right? Paul, an apostle of Jesus Christ. This is a guy of importance. This is a guy who's at the top rung, if you will, of Christianity. He's known as Paul, a witness for Christ. He refers to himself as, "Hey, I'm Paul, the Hebrew of the Hebrews. I'm blameless concerning the law, touching the law." Paul is a guy who uses quite different terminology, though, when it comes to this passage. Here we don't find that he's Paul the great apostle. No, we find that he's Paul the aged. He's Paul, a prisoner of Christ. And it's almost as if Paul is introducing this and jumping in to persuade Philemon to reconcile. And it's almost as if he's saying, "Hey, I'm not here to tell you to reconcile with Onesimus because I have anything to add to my list of titles and resumes. I'm not here to tell you two to make up and to get things right because I just want to add another notch to my belt. I want to add another title. Now I can be Paul the reconciler. No, I'm not trying to add to my list of accomplishments here, Philemon." He's saying, "Hey, I don't have anything to gain from this. It's not for my reputation, Philemon. It's for love's sake. It's for love's sake. It's because we are supposed to be a people of love." And he's saying, "Hey, can I remind you that you've got a foundation for which you need to operate from? You've got a foundation upon which you should live your Christian life. And that foundation for forgiveness, the foundation for why we do everything, is always love's sake. Have we so quickly forgotten the love that Jesus has given us? Have we quickly forgotten what he's done for us? Have we forgotten that Jesus type of love? If you're a father here tonight, you probably understand this better than anyone. If you're honest, can I ask you, what in the world would want to make the manliest man in this entire room want to sit down for hours and hours and play with baby dolls with his daughter? What would ever want to make the roughest, the toughest guy in here want to sit down for hours and have a pretend tea party with his little girls? Is it because he loves playing with baby dolls? Is it because he loves having that tea party? No, it's not. It's not because he loves the baby dolls or he loves having tea parties. It's because he loves the one who loves the baby dolls. It's because he loves the one who loves having the tea party. What on earth would ever compel some of us as husbands to ever go spend hours shopping those horrible, evil, wicked stores like Hobby Lobby and Bed Bath & Beyond and Bath & Body Works? It's not because we love those stores. It's because we love the one who loves those stores. Why would my wife ever sit down and spend 2.5 or 3 hours of her life watching a Baltimore Orioles baseball game with me? It's not because she loves the Orioles. It's because she loves the one who loves the Orioles. And Paul's telling them, he's saying, hey, you've got a foundation for why you should be reconciled to Philemon. It's for love's sake. And I'm reminded of Jesus when he said on that cross, he said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And when I was unloving, when I was unlovable, hey, I didn't deserve the grace of God. I didn't deserve the forgiveness of God in my life. I didn't deserve his grace. But because of Jesus' sake, the Father forgave me. I didn't earn God's forgiveness. There was nothing I could do to have it granted to me. But because of Jesus' sake, the Father forgave me. Now the Father's forgiven me, not because I deserve to be forgiven, but because of love's sake, because of Jesus' sake. And when someone says, oh, I could never just love them like that again, I could never bring myself to forgive them for that. Do you really expect me to... Do you know what they've done to me? Do you expect me to forgive Onesimus? Do you know what Onesimus has done to me? Do you really expect me to forgive him? No, you're not expected to forgive Onesimus because of Onesimus. You're expected to forgive Onesimus because of Jesus' sake. It's because we love Jesus. I don't forgive him based on what he's done for me, for what Onesimus has done against me. I forgive him on the basis that God has first forgiven me. And a missionary that packs up their entire family and goes all the way around the world and transplants their family into a place that they've never lived before, that with people that they don't know, in a place that's foreign to them, they don't do it because they have a relationship with those people yet and because they love those people. They don't do it for them. They do it for Jesus' sake. And we don't go knock on doors and give people invitations to church because we have a great relationship with the person on the other side of that door. We go and knock on people's doors and give them an invitation to church because we love the one who loves the person on the other side of that door. We do it for Jesus' sake. We do it because we love the one who loves them. And you will never experience true forgiveness. And you will never experience a restored relationship in your life until your sole motivation is not because you love to be forgiving, but when your sole motivation is that you love Jesus. He says it's for love's sake. And he gives them the persuasion, the foundation for it all. He says it's for love's sake. But notice secondly, there's profit in forgiveness. Not only the persuasion of forgiveness, but there is profit in forgiveness. Look at verse number 10 with me. He says, I beseech thee for my son Onesimus, whom I have begotten in my bonds, which in time past was to thee unprofitable, but now profitable to thee and to me. And I love here how Paul deals with Onesimus and his past, because here in verse 11, we've got Onesimus, and this is a guy who's literally run away from all his problems. He's taken off, gone out of town. He's run away from everything. And Paul reminds Philemon that there was a time in the past when Onesimus was indeed very unprofitable to him. He's saying, hey, I know he's caused you some hurt. I know he's ran out of the way, but don't underestimate what God has done in his life. But by the way, we ought never underestimate what God can do in someone's life. And even though Onesimus has taken off, he's run out of town, Paul's saying, hey, he was unprofitable, but now he's been saved, now he's been changed, and God's done a work in his life, and you don't need to write that off. You don't need to minimize that, Philemon. At one time, we were all a people who had no value. We had nothing to offer. We were all unprofitable. And Paul is saying, hey, now through the work of God in his life, he's now able to give grace. He's now able to encourage people. He's now able to strive together. And now he is profitable for the ministry. And we have a guy here, Onesimus, who's always on the run, who's always ran from his problems, and now he's able to turn. By the grace of God, Onesimus is able to turn and take this letter in hand. He's able to take it to Philemon on behalf of Paul and try to go and restore a relationship. And I love the role that Paul plays here as mediator. I want you to notice something that's really interesting. Notice in verse 11, notice how much detail Paul goes into about all the sin and all the hurt that he's caused. He says, which in time past was to thee unprofitable, but now profitable to thee and to me. Did you see it? Did you see all the list of sins that he goes through? Did you see how he goes into all the detail of all the hurt and all the pain that he's caused? No! He doesn't go into any of that. He doesn't He doesn't go and list all the laundry list of sins. He doesn't go parade around and let everyone and remind everyone of all the hurt that Onesimus has caused. No, he doesn't do that at all. He doesn't try to pull out this big list of all the sins to make sure that everyone's got an idea of all the pain that he caused. It's as if Paul is saying, hey, Philemon, I'm not worried about Onesimus' past. God's forgiven his past, and you've got to get to the point where you forget his past. And Paul's not concerned anymore with Onesimus' past. Paul's only concern was Onesimus' future. And Paul says, hey, Philemon, I know he caused you some hurt in the past. I know he was unprofitable at a time, but now he's profitable. By the way, God can do his own great work of convicting us of sin, right? Sometimes we feel that like we need to be the ones to bring up everybody's past and bring up all the list of everything that they've done wrong to us, and we need to be the ones that tell everyone else all the awful things that they did to us because they hurt us. But we've got to understand that if we're going to bestow true forgiveness upon someone, we've got to understand that there is worth and there is value in a changed life that Christ has completely transformed. They were once unprofitable, but now they're profitable. But not only the profit of forgiveness, notice thirdly the potential of forgiveness. Notice thirdly the potential of forgiveness. Look at verse number 12. He says, whom I have sent again, thou therefore receive him, that is, mine own bowels, whom I would have retained with me, that in thy stead he might have ministered unto me in the bonds of the gospel. Paul saying, hey, had I not sent Onesimus back to you, I would have just kept him here for myself. I would have just kept him. He's got some great potential. And he's telling him, he's saying, hey, Philemon, don't write off Onesimus. Don't write off his ability. Don't write off what God has done in his life. Hey, he's been changed and there's great potential. Paul's saying, hey, if we can just get him to grow in Christ now, if we can just get him going down the right road, get him on the right path, this guy's got amazing potential to do something for God. He's profitable for the ministry, and yet, you know what we like to do sometimes? We like it when people just kind of stay stuck. It almost helps us out if we know that the person that wronged us, they haven't gotten it right with God yet either, but they hurt us more than we hurt them, so they're more wrong than we are. And we like it when they just stay stuck and when they don't make any effort to come reconcile and when they're just stuck. And it's easier for us in our act of forgiveness to just write people off and say, oh, they'll never do anything else for God. They'll never do anything great for God anymore. They hurt me in the past and that's probably how they'll always stay. But Paul saw that there was great profit and there was great potential in the changed life of Onesimus. But notice lastly, and this is where I want to spend the bulk of the time, notice lastly and fourthly, the problems with forgiveness. There's some problems with forgiveness. Look at verse number 14. Paul says, but without thy mind, I would do nothing, that thy benefit should not be as it were a necessity, but willingly. For perhaps, therefore, he departed for a season, that thou shouldest receive him forever. Not now as a servant, but above a servant, a brother beloved, especially to me. But how much more unto thee, both in the flesh and in the Lord, if thou count me therefore as a partner, receive him as myself. And Paul here is about to address one of the greatest problems that all of us are going to face when it comes to forgiveness. He's about to address the issue of our unwillingness to change. See, sometimes we like to be stubborn in our position. Sometimes we like to just stay stuck where we're at. We're so unwilling to let anyone change our mind about what's been done to us or the hurt that they've caused in the past. And it almost makes us feel better, doesn't it, to just revisit those injustices in our mind and remember and keep track and make sure we've kept the correct score of all the times that they hurt us and all the wrongs that they did to us. And we focus on the pain that they caused and we've kept track of the score and we know that they've done more wrong to us than we did to them. But can I tell you that true forgiveness is when you're able to come to the place in your life when you're willing to change your mind. Did you notice what he said? He said, in verse number 14, he said, but without thy mind, I would do nothing, that thy benefit should not be as it were of necessity, but willingly. He's saying, hey, if you're not willing, I can't force you into renewing this relationship. I can't force you to forgive. He's saying, Philemon, I can't twist your arm into forgiving him. I can't force you to have the mind of Christ. You're going to have to make this decision on your own. You're going to have to be willing to change your mind. Did any of your parents ever grow up, or maybe you do this as parents yourselves now, whenever your brother and sister, they get in a fight, did they ever make you like sit down on the couch together and like hold hands, or you have to hug them for 10 seconds and tell them you love them? Did any of your parents ever make you do that, or do you do that to your kids? That's the worst. I hated doing that as a kid. When I'd get in trouble with my sister, and mom would make us sit down and Say you love them. I love you. Say you're sorry. I'm sorry. Now give them a hug. Act like you love them, right? You hate being forced into making those decisions, right? Because it's not sincere. Now get this picture. Philemon is, he's telling him, he's saying, Philemon, without your mind, without you deciding to change your mind, it's not going to go anywhere. I can send Onesimus back to you with a letter in hand, but if you aren't willing to change your mind first, then no progress is going to be made. Now Onesimus, he's being sent back to Philemon. I want you to get the picture. He's got the letter in hand, and he shows up back on the property, and Onesimus in that day, he would have been a servant or maybe a bond slave. It's not completely clear, but there was some way in which Onesimus was completely unprofitable. He had run off, he had caused hurt, he had caused injury, a lot of harm, he had caused a lot of pain, and there was some area in which he was unprofitable. And can you imagine, as he shows back up at the place that he's run off and the place that he's hurt, and he shows up and people start seeing him and say, oh, you decided to show up again, huh? Who lets you back on the property? I didn't think I was ever going to see you show up here again. Why are you here? Don't you know all the pain you've caused us? Don't you know that now that you've left, we've got more work to do, and we've had to fix all of your big mess-ups and all the things, all the hurt and the pain that you've caused? Didn't think we'd ever see you back here. Don't you know, Onesimus, what you've done? Now Onesimus, he finds Philemon with letter in hand, and he goes up to him, and the fact of the matter is, it's one thing for Onesimus to have the grace and the courage and the strength to go back and try to get things right, but it's another thing entirely for Philemon to take the letter and to handle it right. Because if it took God's grace for him to have the courage to go get it right, it certainly took just as much, if not more, of God's grace for Philemon to handle it right, for Philemon to receive it right. Because it was Philemon who had to change his mind. He was the one that had to do it willingly. It wasn't Onesimus. Onesimus was already on his way. It wasn't the one who caused all the pain and all the problems. It wasn't the guy who caused all the pain in the first place. It was Philemon. Philemon was the one that had to change his mind. And if we're honest, the way it would probably play out for most of us if we were in that situation, well, I don't guess Paul knew the whole story, did he? Paul's been in prison with Onesimus, and Onesimus has just been telling him his side of the story, right? He doesn't know my side of the story. He doesn't know how bad it's been for me here. Onesimus has just been giving him his side and his side of the story. And if Paul only knew everything that happened to me, he wouldn't be writing this letter this way. It wouldn't be going this way. That's how it would happen if most of us were in that situation. And Paul's saying, hey, Philemon, without your mind, if you don't change your mind, we're not going to make any progress. I'm not even going to attempt to do anything. And the fact of the matter is if we don't come to a place where we're willing to change our mind, then spiritually we will get to a point where we're stuck. It doesn't matter what class we teach. It doesn't matter how long we've been in the church. It doesn't matter what areas we're involved in. It doesn't matter what ministry you served in. From all we know, Philemon was the spiritual leader of this church anyways in his city. Philemon was the guy, he says in this book, the church met in his own house. He was the one that people looked to. He was the leader. He was the one that everybody looked to for advice, for spiritual leadership. He's one of the leaders in the church. And the fact of the matter is, from this letter, we see that Philemon, had he not been willing to change his mind, would have gotten to a place where he is stuck. And how many Christians come to a place where we have the knowledge of the Word of God and we serve in the church and we have the understanding of spiritual things, but yet the hand of God is no longer doing all that it could be doing through our life because we have gotten stuck because we're unwilling to change our mind about a certain situation that happened to us years ago and someone that wronged us a long time ago. And then in verse 15, you'll notice what Paul encourages him to change his mind about. Verse number 15. For perhaps he therefore departed for a season, that thou shouldest receive him forever. Paul's saying, hey, he may have departed you for a season. That word season there is a short time. It literally means a brief time. It's literally translated an hour, a short, brief little time. And Paul here, though, you've got to understand, he's not trying to minimize the pain that's been caused to Philemon. He's not trying to minimize that and say, hey, your pain doesn't matter. He's not saying that at all. Paul's just condensing it and saying, hey, you've got to recognize that this is only a season. He's saying, hey, Philemon, don't make your whole life about a season. It's a short time. Yes, he was unprofitable to you, and yes, he caused you pain and hurt, but don't make your whole life about a season. He's saying, Onesimus may have caused you some pain, but you've got to move on. You've got to reconcile. You've got to get some things right. It's just a season. My wife and I get to work with many of you guys as kids on Sunday mornings. We love it. We love working in there with Sunday school, and they're a blast. But if there's anything kids are known for, if you ever notice whenever they get a scratch or they get a bump on their knee, man, they get hurt and they cry about it, and it's rough going at it, and you're trying to get them to do anything, and they're just crying, and it gets better, you know, and they stop crying, but they want everybody to know that they're in pain, right? They want everyone, the whole world, to know that they've been hurt and that there's some injury to it, right? And then, you know, they okay, sit on the couch, it'll get better, you'll be all right, whatever. So time goes on, and they can't help with anything. Man, their knee is scratched so bad, they can't take out the trash, and they can't do the dishes, they can't help sweep the floor, they can't do anything because they've been hurt. And then their friend comes over 5 minutes later, and they forget about it, and they start running around, they start playing, acting like it never happened, and they're off playing with something or whatever. But then friend leaves, and now it's time to do the dishes and clean up after, and oh, I'm hurt again, I can't do it, I'm in pain, it's the end of the world, right? Kids are really good at making their whole day about a scratch. They're good at making their whole day about a season, about a brief time. And I want to be a help in some way tonight, and I don't want to minimize any of the pain that's been caused to you. I don't want to minimize the pain that someone's put into your life, the injury, or the suffering that you've gone through. I don't know what abuses have taken place towards you. But can I tell you, it was a season. The story may be ugly, but it was a season. It was a short time. It was an hour. It was a brief time. And biblical forgiveness is when I can come to the place in my life where I say, it was just a season. It's not my whole life. And we say, oh, I could never go hang out with him. I could never go back and spend time with him. Our friendship will never be the same. I could never. But why are we making our whole life about a season? Why are we rearranging and going out of our way to make sure we stay away from that side of the family or avoid that person because we're making our life about a season? He's saying, don't you understand, Philemon, if you don't change your mind, you're going to be stuck. And there are seasons that's going to come into your life. There are seasons of pain and seasons of death and seasons of sickness, and seasons are going to come into your life. And there's people everywhere you look, there's people that when a season comes in their life, they want to give up. They want to blame God. They want to blame someone else. They want to quit the church. They want to do all these things. But Paul's saying, hey, it's just a season. Don't make it the rest of your life. And it doesn't matter who you are or where you work or what line of work you're involved in, I can guarantee you that there's going to be some Onesimus in your life. There's going to be someone in your life who causes some pain, causes some injury, causes some hurt and some inconvenience in your life. But you know how you can tell whether or not you've truly forgiven someone? You can tell by the reaction on your face when they show up at the door with their letter. Because if it took God's grace for Onesimus to bring the letter, how much more of God's grace did it take for Philemon to be able to receive that letter in the right way? And as we read this story, we begin to realize that it wasn't Onesimus that was stuck. It wasn't Onesimus who needed to change his mind. It's not the one who caused all the problems who needed to get some stuff right. It was Philemon that needed to change his mind. It was the one who had been hurt. He was the one who needed to get some things right and who needed more of God's grace in his life to handle that area. He was the one who hadn't dealt with it. It was Philemon. And by the way, when you and I came to God for forgiveness, can I remind you that he didn't have to stand there and think about whether or not he was going to forgive you. Your forgiveness was settled at the cross. When you realized that you were a sinner and that you were lost without Christ, then you had to have someone save you, and you realized that the only way that you could have your sins forgiven was through Jesus, and you came and said, God, take my broken life, take my sins away, give me a home in heaven. Jesus didn't have to say, oh, let me see, I need to talk to the Father first and check and make sure it's okay if I can forgive you or not. No, forgiveness was already settled at the cross. It was already waiting on you before you were even born. Forgiveness was already there. You just had to receive it. So can I ask you, when Onesimus shows up at your door with letter in hand, is he going to receive a glare or a hug? And what we like to say is, well, if you're really sorry, I'm just going to have to watch you for a little while and make sure you're sincere about your apology. I'm just going to have to make sure that you really meant what you said, because you hurt me a lot. Remember all the pain that you caused me? I'm just going to have to watch you and make sure that you really mean what you're saying. What chapter and what verse do we find that in? What biblical example do we have of that? But yet we do it. It's how we think. We do it time and time again. But you know, we do find, you know what biblical example we do find? We find the example of the prodigal son. And you remember when the son returns home and the father's standing there and he returns home and what we don't see is the father, the prodigal son, standing there, to forgive or not to forgive? That is the question. No, we don't see that at all. We see him there with open arms, ready to forgive him. I can imagine that the words couldn't even hardly come out of the son's mouth fast enough. He said, Father, I'm not worthy to be that son. Make me as one of your hired servants. No, go get the robe, man. But Dad, don't you remember? Go kill the fatted calf. But Dad, don't you remember all the hurt I caused? No, go get it. Get the ring. Put it on him. But Dad, don't you remember all the pain of God? Dad, don't you want to talk about it? No, it's already been settled, son. Forgiveness was already waiting on you. And when I came to Christ, forgiveness was already waiting on me. It was a season, and Paul knew that the danger that Philemon could fall into, it could put a halt to his spiritual life, was if he made his life about a season. And in verse 16, notice with me though, he says, not now as a servant, but above a servant. A brother beloved, especially to me, but how much more unto thee, both in the flesh and in the Lord. And if thou count me therefore a partner, receive him as myself. And it's almost as if Paul is here anticipating Philemon's next move. Can you see Onesimus? Okay, Paul, you, Philemon's saying, you want me to receive him? Okay, Onesimus, I'll receive you back. Yeah, you can come back, you can live here, but I'm going to show you who's boss. You remember all the pain that you hurt me? We're just going to pick up right where you left off. All the hurt that you caused me. We got some extra work for you. It's going to be great. You're going to love it. I'm going to just take care of the matter. I'm going to show you who's boss. And it's almost as if Paul's reading his mind and saying, let me just get something out of the way real quick. When you receive him, he's not coming back to you as a servant. When you receive him, you're going to receive him Not as a servant, Philemon. You're going to receive him as a brother. Gulp. And not just a brother, Philemon. Notice the next word. He said, therefore, in verse number 16, he says, not as a servant, but above a servant, a brother beloved. Double gulp. Not only am I supposed to not just receive him as a servant like he used to be, now he's a brother. And not just a brother, he's a brother beloved. You got to be kidding me, Paul. I've got to receive him like that. That word beloved, it literally carries the idea of something that is highly esteemed, something cherished, something of intrinsic or sentimental value. One thing that I will never understand, I was talking to my wife a little bit about today, one thing I will never that has never made sense to me ever in history, I don't think it ever will, is fine china. I do not understand. It is, to me, the most pointless thing ever. But ladies love it, don't they? They love fine china. Maybe you're grandmother passed it down to you, or mom likes to pass on their fine china, those nice white dishes there that you can never use. And I was talking to my wife, and she loves it. She cherishes it, right? And my wife, she loves it. She gets her fine china. I'm thinking, okay, cool, you know, we got this nice china. When are we going to use it? Oh, we're not going to use it. Oh, okay, not going to use it. What about when really, you know, people we like really special guests come over? Not going to use it down here? Okay, gotcha. Well, we got to be careful with it, too. You can't mess up the china. You can't break the china. I've got some really good boxes. We can just put it in that are padded. We can put some newspaper in there. We can store them up in the closet. Oh, we can't put them in the closet. We got to put them out to display. Gotcha, so people can look at them that we don't use. The stuff that we never use, we got. Oh, so now we gotta buy a cabinet for it too. They gotta have a cabinet to go, a china cabinet. Gotcha. Oh, and it can't use any cabinet. You gotta be able to look through the cabinet so you can see the china inside the cabinet that you don't use, right? China doesn't make sense to me. Never has, probably never will. But it's cherished, it's valued. And for you, maybe it's fine china, maybe it's a gun that was handed down to you, maybe it was a family heirloom that's been in your family for years. I don't know what it is. But when it's something of value, you want to display it. You want to cherish it. You want to show it off. You want to stick it. You don't want to stick it in the closet. You want to show it off to people. You want it to be put in a place of honor. You want to exalt it, lift it up, show people that you really care about it, that it's special to you, that there's some worth to it. And Paul says, hey, when you receive him, you're not going to go back treating him like a servant that he used to be. You're going to treat him as a brother. And by the way, not just the evil redheaded stepbrother. It's going to be a brother beloved. And if that's not hard enough, Paul's not finished yet. Look at verse number 17. If thou therefore count me as a partner, receive him as myself. And I can only imagine as Philemon is reading this and saying, oh, I can't receive him as a servant. Oh, a brother. A brother beloved. Not just a brother beloved. I've got to receive him like you, Paul. Like you, the great apostle. I've got to receive him just as I would receive you. Can I remind you tonight that when I came to Christ, Colossians 1 tells me that I was the enemy of God. I wasn't just a really bad sinner. I was the enemy of God. I was opposed to God. I was the enemy of God. And yet Romans tells me that God commendeth his love toward us, and that while I was yet a sinner, and Christ died for us. And then in Romans 8, it tells me that when I got saved, when I received forgiveness, I'm no longer an enemy of God. Now I'm a son of God. And not only if I am a son, I'm an heir. But not only an heir, I'm a joint heir. I'm a joint heir with Christ. And so you mean to tell me that when God forgave me because of Jesus' sake, and not only did he take me in, not only did he forgive my sins, and not only did he treat me as a son, but now he treats me as an heir, as a joint heir with Christ. And you say, how in the world did I earn that position? Did I just have good connections with God? What did I do to gain this position with God where I am a joint heir with Christ? No, I didn't have all the connections. We didn't have a great connection with God. We didn't have any connection with God. We were lost, we were undone, we were unlovable, we were on our way to hell. But the cross changed everything. And now, we've been reconciled. And if God had led us back into his family as servants, we should be singing hallelujah. But he doesn't welcome us back into his family as servants. He welcomes us back into his family as sons and heirs and joint heirs with Christ. And the more you study this book, the more you're going to realize that Paul is really just trying to tell Philemon one thing. He's saying, hey, Philemon, do you want to live out biblical forgiveness in your life? You're just going to have to start living like Jesus. And sometimes we say, well, I've forgiven him. But wait a second. If our forgiveness does not look like the Father's forgiveness, then it's not true biblical forgiveness. So we haven't talked to that family member in how long? We haven't. We haven't made any effort to renew that relationship in how long? How many days? How long has it been? He says, Philemon, receive him as a brother beloved. And you need to receive him, Philemon. You need to receive him just like Jesus received you and I. And the focus of this letter isn't so much on Onesimus getting it right. The focus is more so on Philemon handling it right. And sometimes you may have not been the one who has offended other people. You might not have been the one who caused the pain, but you still have a biblical obligation in your life to handle it right when they come asking for forgiveness. There's a well-known story of a man in Torrance, from Torrance, California. He was a runner all throughout high school. He was an incredible athlete, and from the get-go in his life, people knew that he was just going to be a world-class athlete. They knew that this guy was just destined for greatness. He was running his mile in under 4.5 minutes, and this guy, you might have heard of his name, was known as the Torrance Tornado, they called him. His name was Louis Zamperini. And he was running his mile under 4.5 minutes. He was getting faster and faster in every race he entered, every competition. By the time he graduated high school, he was winning everything. He was just blowing the competition out of the water. So he began training for the 1936 Olympics in Berlin. And he ended up going and qualifying for those Olympics. And he got there, and while he didn't receive any medals, he still placed, and he just set his sights on the next 4 years later in 1940. The Olympics were scheduled to be in Tokyo, but as you know, World War II happened, and those Olympics never came. Zamperini joined the Army Air Corps in 1941, and long story short, after being stationed in Oahu, he went out on a plane that was gunned down. He was crashed in the sea, and he spent 47 days in the middle of the ocean just trying to survive. To make matters worse, though, after those 47 days, which I can't even imagine trying to survive in the middle of the ocean for 47 days, he's just trying to stay alive, and he's captured, he's found by Japanese soldiers. And he's taken from prison camp to prison camp, and he's moved over and over and over, and all throughout he comes in contact with guard after guard after guard, and he goes through torture after horrible experience and all this pain that's happened to him. This body of a man who was so physically fit and who was just destined for greatness, who had all the potential in the world, his athletic ability, everything that he had, all of his value in this world was just taken from him. he's finally moved to a prison camp called the Omori prison camp, where a Japanese army corporal by the name of Mutsuhiro Watanabe made it his goal to mentally and to physically abuse and to torture every person, but specifically Zamperini, that any time he came into contact with him. And Zamperini just wouldn't give up, and there was day after day of countless and horrible torture that he experienced. It was unimaginable, all the things that he went through, and this one guy, they called him the Bird, and the Bird would just consistently torture him and beat him and try to put this guy, who was supposed to be a great athlete, just try to drive him into the ground and to break his spirit. But after some time, the Bird was moved to another prison camp, and Zamperini eventually survived. And 1945 came, and the end of the war came, and Zamperini was sent back to California, sent back home, and bitterness and hatred soon engulfed his life. He was so full of hate of all the things that had happened to him, he would never be able to run at the ability that he once had. He had it all taken away from him. He became an alcoholic, and things with his wife weren't good. His life was just kind of crashing down. Until one day his wife said, "Hey, you need to go hear this evangelist speak." And he got in contact with Billy Graham, and he went to hear Billy Graham preach. And the first service that he heard Billy Graham preach, he gave him the gospel, and Zamperini was saved. Sometime later, as Zamperini began to get back into the workforce and wonder what he should do with his life, he could not get the countless memories of soldier after soldier after soldier who had abused him, who had tortured him, who had beat him up. And he made trip after trip after trip back to Japan. And he went to Japan over and over and over, and he made so many trips back to Japan. And each time he made it his goal to get in contact, to find the people who had literally tortured him, who had beat him into the ground, who had just abused his body physically. And time after time after time, he found all these guards, and he said, "Hey, I've already forgiven you. I just need you to accept the forgiveness." He went to guard after guard and said, "Hey, I've forgiven you. It's okay. I've forgiven you. Jesus has done a work in my life." And he'd give him the gospel, and there was people that were saved. People that had abused him would receive the gospel, would receive it because of his forgiveness. But there was one guy that he couldn't ever seem to track down. It was the Bird, the one who had been the most hateful to him, the one who had beat him up the most, the one who had caused him the most pain. There's one man who he tried to get in contact with, and time again, finally found him, and he requested to meet with him, but Watanabe said, "Hey, I'm not going to meet with you." He turned it down. The one guy who needed his forgiveness the most, the one guy who had caused him the most pain, the one guy who had caused the most torture to his body, the one guy who needed his forgiveness more than any of the other guards, refused it. Zamperini, though, he had already forgiven him. He'd already forgiven. He said, "Hey, forgiveness is already here. I've already forgiven you. I just want to meet with you face to face and tell you I forgive you." But Watanabe refused it. Forgiveness was already waiting on him, but he turned it down. Church, can I tell you, it takes courage for Onesimus to get it right, but it takes the grace of God for Philemon to handle it right. And you might not have been the one who caused all the pain, and you might have had more wrongs done to you than you did to them, but it takes courage, and it takes the grace of God in your life for you to handle forgiveness right. And Paul gave the persuasion for forgiveness. He said, "Do it for love's sake. Do it for Jesus' sake." He said, "There's profit in you forgiving him. There's potential in his life. He's now profitable for the ministry. He's been changed and saved. Don't write him off, Philemon. And then he said, "But there's some problems you're going to encounter with forgiveness. You're going to have to change your mind, Philemon. You've got to do it willingly. I can't make you do it." He says, "It's only a season. Don't make your life about a season." He said, "You need to receive him as a brother, beloved. Receive him as myself." And then he said, "When Onesimus comes to get it right, you need to be willing to handle it right." May we be a church that lives out the blueprint of biblical forgiveness. Let's pray tonight. God, I thank you for your word. I thank you for forgiving us, Lord, when we offended you and when we caused you pain. You had forgiveness waiting for us. God, I pray that we would show a measure of your forgiveness to those around us. God, that our relationships would be built on the blueprint that you've given us for biblical forgiveness. We love you, God, and please speak to our hearts, work in our lives. In Jesus' name.
With heads bowed and eyes closed, I'm going to give you just a minute or two right there as the piano plays. Ask the Lord to search your heart. Is there somebody who needs your forgiveness? would you be willing for Christ's sake to give it?